Hello, everyone. All right, we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome, welcome. Welcome to your Nana's JavaScript, or not your Nana's JavaScript. I didn't actually make the title. A Kiwi wrote the title, because I don't have a Nana, I have a grandma. But so as you can probably tell from my accent. Let's jump in. We have a lot to cover. This is, hopefully the demo will go well. It's kind of a long demo with a lot of steps, and hopefully we'll be able to illustrate a lot of points. It has the potential to be riddled with errors, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. Otherwise, it'll be really good entertainment. I really wasn't going to say much about myself, but I figure since I'm new and I understand everybody in the software business in New Zealand knows each other, so you all know each other, but I'm relatively new, so nobody knows me. I've only been living in Auckland since December. I moved over from Seattle, where I was at Microsoft for 12 years. The first half of the time I was in the services org as an app dev consultant, and the second half I was in the patterns and practices team in the developer division. So it's cool to be in New Zealand. People ask me if I came to New Zealand to work, and I said, no, I came to New Zealand to live. I just have to work. But yeah. So before we get underway, before we kind of start this journey, a couple of first impressions about Windows 8 development. Now, for the past couple of years, I've been really focused on the web and doing a lot of front-end web work. I'm really excited about a lot of the new technologies around front-end and doing single-page apps and what that means to mobile and that whole space. So I'm pretty excited about all that. Although doing this Win 8 stuff, you know, kind of, a lot of the Win 8 work I've been doing has actually been for Microsoft. The team I work for is actually based out of Seattle, which is weird because I left there. Now my manager is there, and yeah, so it's kind of a weird situation. But so all the Win 8 apps I've done have been for Microsoft, actually, for big keynote demos and that kind of stuff. No real apps yet. I attended Envy Interactive session yesterday, and it was cool because they're actually building real apps that they've deployed to the store and stuff. Yeah, I haven't put any in the store yet. We're in the process of getting a few apps in the store, but so far they've just been shown on big stages at big conferences. So my first impressions, I was a little skeptical, in all honesty. I mean, I've been a fan of Microsoft's for a long time, but I was pretty skeptical about how well they would execute on using web technologies for doing apps. But I gotta say, I'm actually really impressed. When you look at the way they use CSS and HTML and JavaScript, the patterns that they use in JavaScript, the way they're using it, it's all very modern. I mean, most of us have been around for a while and know that JavaScript has had a kind of a long and lustrous life, where in the beginning it was really hard to be successful at. It was really hard to do right by JavaScript because it had so many sharp edges. Nowadays, I think we've matured, the language has matured, and we understand how to use it. And Windows 8's really using JavaScript the right way, which is really good. They didn't try to turn it into something it's not. They're not using CSS in ways that they shouldn't. So I'm actually quite excited about the way they've used the technologies to build a kind of a unique experience. The tools are pretty good. Visual Studio 2012 is pretty much where you need to be. When you're building Win 8 apps, you don't really need a browser. It doesn't really make sense to use it, which is a good distinction in action, because we are using web technologies, but we're building apps. These apps we build for Windows 8 won't run in the browser, and that's important to understand. You know, when I first heard that Windows 8 was going to have JavaScript apps, I was all excited. I was like, yes, we'll be able to write apps that I can both deploy to apps in the App Store but also run on the web. No, you can't do that. So the runtime won't run in a browser and run in that execution environment. So you're pretty much building for apps, but that's okay because we don't have to worry about browser compatibility issues and some of the other things that aren't so great about doing kind of traditional web development. All right, so here's the game plan. Here's how we're going to spend the next hour. I think it's important, I was talking with some colleagues about this as well, how you go about learning a technology is actually quite important, and I think that as an industry we've matured in understanding that how we go about learning a technology is important, and Microsoft definitely understands that. But we're also seeing really good examples of that on GitHub and in the community in general. People understand that when you're approaching something new, it's important that you have the right mind frame, the right perspective when you're coming to it. So I want to talk a little bit about how to go about learning this. I'm just going to call it Win8 development because, you know, can't use Metro anymore. Modern is too ambiguous. And so we'll just say Windows 8 development. And you'll know I'm talking about WinRT type apps, if that's cool. And then we're gonna go on a bit of a little journey. We have about four different sections. Each section has a number of steps that we're gonna use a starting point, and then we're gonna build it out to try to get some insight into how to go about building Windows 8 apps, and or at least a particular aspect of Win8 apps. So you can there's a lot of features and a lot of things you can use when you're building these. There's a lot of things you can. There's contracts and shares and the app bar and snap view and all the, there's a lot of different aspects of it. We're going to touch on a couple, but we're really going to focus primarily on data binding because that tends to be something that we do a lot of, especially when we're building business apps. So we're going to explore a bit about data binding. So we're going to do this in the context of a single page app. When you're dealing in Windows 8 development, you can have multiple pages, and you can literally navigate to and from those pages, and that's cool. But there's a navigation metaphor, a navigation tool set available that I think makes the apps a bit easier to use. So we're going to look at that. And so we'll look at code structure, modularity. We're going to look at I'm going to implement a little bit of an MVVM pattern. So we will have a view model. We will have a distinct model and view model. But is everything done exactly the way you should? No. And actually, that's an important point about what we're going to do during this session. A lot of sessions, especially at Tech Ed and conferences like this, are very clean. This isn't going to be a clean session. The code we write isn't going to be clean. It isn't going to be pristine. It isn't going to necessarily be best practices. Some of it definitely not. And some of it isn't going to work. I can already tell you right now, the last part of the demo, it isn't going to work. I'm not being a pessimist. I'm being honest. It's not going to work. But that's okay because we know that, and I'll explain this more as we get there, but when you're doing data binding, you can go down two different roads. We're going to try to go down both roads. And it doesn't work. But it's going to show us the limitations, and it's going to show us you know, a little bit of insight into both of the roads without actually doing either one of them. So we're going to ride the fence and fall off. All right. So that's what we're going to do. We'll talk about templates and observables, and we'll bring in some third-party libraries and that kind of stuff. So, don't expect a really clean by the book. If I go, that means that I didn't expect it. And so we might be in trouble then, but I don't expect that'll happen. All right, so as I said, it's important to understand how you're coming into this. How are you going about learning Windows 8 development? You have a couple of options. There's a lot of sample code. I think it's a 300 meg download. How many people have downloaded the sample apps? That actually makes me feel pretty good. Because if everybody raised their hand, I'd have just felt like, why am I up here? They already know this stuff. All right, so it's cool that you haven't. But there's a lot of sample apps. There are about 300 meg for JavaScript, HTML, C#, and C++. So there's a lot of them, and each of them focus on a very specific feature of Windows 8 development, whether it be the app bar, or whether it be data binding, or whether it be all these things. So it's really good, but you don't want to start there. I did. That's not a good place to start. These demos are, because they focus on a very specific thing, the rest of it is rubbish. You don't want to be tainted by the way that they've implemented these demos and their code reuse patterns. It's not that good, right? But the way they focus on the feature is good. So when you need to get down to feature work, the samples are awesome, but don't start there. It'll cause you to stumble. It did me. The documentation is not horrific. It's not that bad. There's a lot of it out there. Almost all of it was generated from the code base. It's going to get better. It's not going to start there either. Not that you would start with the documentation. I wasn't assuming anything. We know we wouldn't start there anyway, but just to mention it. Stack Overflow, Blogsphere, certainly lots of good help out there with specifics, but only after you've kind of gotten on your way, right? Now, I've already alluded to the best place to start. Visual Studio has some great project templates, and there's only a handful, but they're actually really good. A lot of times, and we know this, especially if you think back to like VB6 timeframe, A lot of the starter apps, you know, you drag a button on, double click it, code behind, you know, it's not encouraging the best practices. But actually, the templates that are available for Windows 8 aren't bad. They're not bad at all. Not crazy about the way they did data, but that's all right, you know, because generally the data is so specific to the application you're building anyway that it's the way they implemented data in these sample apps. But there is data, and it's already data bound, and it's already there, and so it's really not bad. It's not bad, and that's actually where we're going to start. So it's a great place to start the journey. All right, so I think we're about ready to get going. So the first thing we're going to do is we're just going to fire. Now, I've already done this, and this was just because I was nervous, but let me flip over to mine. To this. Now, I've already created the app, and the reason I did that is because I'm going to be living over here for the next hour in the little toolbox. I'm sure most of you know that in Visual Studio in the toolbox, you can just drag code in there, and you can organize it by tabs, and you can drag it back in. Well, I'm going to be using that a lot. But that is that's flaky. It's really flaky, and sometimes it's saved into your VS settings, and I don't know why, but sometimes it just gets all whacked out, and you'll have duplicates, and they'll be out of order, and your tabs will get renamed, and tabs will be empty, and it's enough to make a presenter lose his mind, right? So I made backups and all this other stuff, but I went ahead and started up the app just to make sure that they were going to be there and that they're all populated, and that's going to irritate me, I can already tell. All right, So those are the kind of the four steps, and we're just going to walk through this. And I'll explain all the code. I'm not going to be doing a lot of typing because that would also just be riddled with mistakes. But that's what we'll do. So that's why I've already started it. But of course, all I did was I just went to File, New Project. I chose the Grid app. Now, there's a number of different apps that you can start with. The Blank app is literally that. It's blank. There's not really anything in it. There's no navigation. There's no data. There's nothing. It's just a shell for you to populate. And then they go from there. The Split app has some functionality. The Navigation app obviously has the navigation stuff. The Grid app has all of it. So we're going to just go with the one that has the most functionality to start with. And so all I did was called that TechEd app demo something and the Grid app, and I hit OK, and that's all I've done so far. So first, let's have a look at the structure. They changed the structure from one of the release previews, and I'm really happy that they did. Not that I had a big problem with the way it was laid out before, but I really like this. It's a lot more explicit. So obviously, we have our references. We're referencing the 1.0 JavaScript library. That's by default. Didn't have to do anything to get that. And that's our base UI and our UI, UI.js and base.js. We have a CS file. This is CSS. This is the style sheets for the whole app. We can put those in there. We have images. These are images for the whole app. I should probably do that. Maybe I could do it that way, and I can actually use my mouse still. So these are the images for the whole app, CSS for the whole app, JavaScript, same thing. For the whole app, we have some data. We have default, which coincides with our default.html, and a navigator. We're going to be playing with these a bit. And then pages. And even though it's an app, you still have this concept of pages, and that's okay. It's a decent metaphor. It still works really well. Inside that, we have different pages, and then each of those pages have their own assets. So they have their own HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. I also have found that each of your pages will typically have images that are only for that page. So I'll create an images folder in each of these folders, and then put images in there that are specific just for that page. That works. Whether I'm referencing them from CSS or just straight with an image tag, I'll put them in there. And that actually works really well. So we're going to be, now that we have had a chance to see, we have three pages. We have group items, we have group detail and item detail. Grouped items is kind of our home page. It's the one that we go to first. So let's see what that looks like. We're not going to use local machine because the resolution gets all whacked out. So I'm going to use the simulator instead. I have a tablet too, but trying to show the tablet and code and the resolutions, this should work just much easier. So we'll go ahead and kick it off, just so you can get an idea of what you get out of the box with no coding or no anything. And I don't know how well this may work okay. Let's try this. All right, so here's the app. We get some, whoops. We can, you know, I'm not good. Hopefully everyone can see it. Let's just do it this way. Whoops. Let's do it this way, because I think, what in the world? Oh, no. Okay, I'm not used to seeing that. Let's just kill that and try it again. That was weird. I think the zoomed into that, and it got all confused. All right, so let's close this. Let's try it again. And we're not going to worry about the zooming thing. Hopefully you can see it well enough to, it's all right. There's a changed resolution thing here, but I don't think it makes much of a, it doesn't necessarily make the window much bigger if you do it this way. All right, let's try that. All right, so you only have three pages, right? So this is our grouped items. When you click on an item, you go to the item detail. The mouse works. Click back to go back to grouped items. That was item detail. If you click on any of the group headers, that takes you to header detail. So also scroll, and if you click on an item again, it takes you to item detail, so you get the idea. Pretty straightforward, right? We're pretty much only going to be working on this page anyway, but it just gives you an idea of what's available. All right, so let's find out, let's talk a little bit about activation. How did we get here? I mean, how did we go through the sequence to end up on grouped items? That's kind of that's a good thing to know about. So we're going to start with this, our manifest file, our appx manifest. This is just a metadata file that has a bunch of settings for the app. That's kind of app-wide settings. We can zoom in a little bit. Really, the main thing that we're looking at here is the start page.default.html. That tells the app, that piece of metadata tells the app what page to go to first. Pretty straightforward. There's other stuff here, too, that we're not going to get into. Pretty much all of your app-wide images, like icons, tiles, your notification badge logo, which is the little number, it's a little icon for your app. When you have notifications, it'll always have a little icon associated with it, so the user knows what app that notification's for, because the notification probably won't have any branding on it. So that is the little bit of branding that's there. You have to define all the different capabilities that you want your app to have. You have to be explicit about those, so you'll define those here. There's also some declarations. Number of other things that you want your app to integrate with in the operating system, so you can do sharing and different things. Some content URIs. These are special URIs that have more privileges than most other ones do. And then, of course, your packaging stuff, the stuff that'll go into the store. It's primarily around publishing to the store. So the main thing I wanted to show here was the default.html. That's what lets the app know which page to go to first, and that's where we are right here. So you'll see there's not a lot of content here. There's basically this content host, which is our navigator. And our navigator is this page control navigator with some options that say home, and home is this grouped items.html. All right, so how does that get run? Well, this kind of gets into a couple of the different types of different ways that you can structure your code. We have namespaces, we have classes, we have controls, and really, controls are just classes. You would think that this application.pageControlNavigator sounds all special and sounds, ooh, it's probably, you know, part of the runtime. Well, it's not really. It's provided for us in this navigator right here. So we're referencing navigator here. So that'll bring navigator.js in, and you can start to see how the navigator was put together. So application is a namespace. I love namespaces. And actually, I think that's probably the default. That's their go-to way of structuring your JavaScript in 1A apps is the namespaces, because it encourages a very functional programming style, which is a style that JavaScript does really well in. If you're coming from C#, or if you've done most of your coding in C#, this is where I would caution you a bit. In C#, obviously, it's a type language, and so you spend a lot of time thinking about types and inheritance and that kind of stuff. You don't. If you lean to that first in JavaScript, you'll be stumbling. If you think more functional, I found that it just makes things easier. It's a dynamic language, so types are, you know, not really important. that puts all the importance on actual object instances and functions. And so if you think in terms of those and stop thinking in terms of types, I believe you'll be more successful. That's why I really think namespaces should be your de facto, because you can basically just throw a bunch of functions in there. There's not a concept of an instance of a namespace, so it's just functions, and it just works. It's good. Yes. Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I never thought about that. I mean, I guess the whole purpose of the file is, for the people that didn't understand the question or didn't hear the question, he asked, why is the file name different than the namespace name? Especially if you're coming from Java, then that would be a big, you know, faux pas. But yeah, I think because the whole primary purpose of the file is around navigation, and it's to house this page control navigator. That's the reason they called it. But there's no rules around what you have to call the files and so forth. So, yeah, good observation. I hadn't actually picked up on that. But, yeah, you could put more stuff inside of application, but you don't have to do it here either. Like, page control navigator is part of application, but you can always add new stuff to application in a completely separate file. You don't have to do it here, right? So, and you'll also notice that page control navigator is just a class. It's just a class, and a class has a pretty straightforward structure. It has two arguments, this class define method. It has the constructor, which is this first part, and actually this right here, if my resharper was working, it couldn't find the license server, so it kind of said no. But if it was alive, it would tell me that never gets called, and it's true, it doesn't. It doesn't even need to get called. You can have an anonymous function there as well, and that'll act just as the constructor just fine. So this whole first part is the constructor, and everything else, this object literal here, it contains all of the other members of the class all the way down. You'll notice some of them have underscores. Underscores really are no different. I mean, it's a dynamic language. You can access everything. The only difference with underscores is the WinRT runtime doesn't make those available if you're looping in a for-in loop over the type. Then you won't get the things in with the underscore, but that's it. If you want to go directly to them, you can. So it's kind of pseudo-private. It's like it wants to be left alone, but you don't really have to listen to it, that kind of thing. So that's the only thing that's different about those. And it's also just a visual indicator that they're private. But this is our navigator, and you'll notice that it takes an options and the element that it was declared on. So if we look over here, we see the element it was declared on, and then we have its options, and they map one-to-one. So when this thing gets invoked, all the options get passed into here. We can see that home is one of them. It goes on to this.home, which is defined down here. And then it says, where'd it go? Yeah, application.navigator. So here, we're just adding something on to application already. And saying this, and because we're in the constructor, this is the instance of that navigator class. And that's how home, or that URL, gets attached to our navigator. But how did we actually get navigated there? Because you'll notice we have nav, which is WinJS navigation, but you'll never see a navigate in this file, especially one that goes to home. So that happens over in our default. .js. So this is where our activation happens, and that's pretty much all you're going to use the default.js for, is just activation. There's a lot of ways your application can get activated. We're not going to go into all of them now, but just suffice it to say that your application may just be suspended by the operating system. You don't have any guarantees that your app is always going to be running just because it's open. It could get suspended. You'll get told when it's just being suspended with this on checkpoint event. So you can watch for that. Here, obviously, it's saving our history into session state so that it could be restored later, which would happen up here. Here, we're basically looking for navigation or looking for the location. If we don't have the location, then we navigate to application navigator home, which is what we just saw in the navigator, right? So that's actually the line that navigates us to the grouped items.html file. Okay, so that's a bit about activation. Let me cheat and go. Oh, I had it open. I think that's most of it. No. We wanted to actually do some stuff here too. So let's start making some changes, and I'll come back if I forgot to say something. All right, so the first thing we're going to do is enable our app bar. We have an app bar. So we want to make what was just our read-only grid, we want to add some functionality to it, add some behavior to it so that we can start playing around with data binding. So I'm going to delete this app bar, and I'll drag this one in. And this app bar, you can see, has three app bar commands, pretty straightforward, add, edit, delete. And it has, so those are the options. Really nice that the icons are pretty much built in. If you look for app bar commands, or app bar command icons, they're just simple names and they map to glyphs in the, in, what is it, Sago UI, I think. So we have some buttons. Those will show up in our app bar. The next thing is we have to add listeners for those. So over in our grouped items, let's go over to grouped items in the HTML page. We're going to add some, actually I meant to open the JavaScript file. So here's the JavaScript file. Something to note about this, this is just winjs.ui.pages.defined. So every time you have a page, the JavaScript file that's associated with it has a page JavaScript file associated with it. That actually works really well. It has three functions on it by default. It has ready, update, layout, and an unload. This one doesn't have an unload. Obviously, you opt in if you need them. You can also add as much to it. So depending on the functionality of your page, you can add the functionality that'll be in that'll be defined in your page. So it's a good place to store page-level behaviors. So we're going to add some. Now, just a bit, we're talking about data binding, but I'm not going to data bind the app bar just because we'll have enough. We're going to get our fill of data binding, and this was just easier. Plus, it shows you some event handling. So let's just drop some listeners in here. So you can see we're just, and you'll also notice I'm just using just the straight DOM API. It's okay. It's not riddled with as many compatibility issues as we're used to in the web, but it's also very verbose. It tends to be a lot of typing and a lot of text. You can use jQuery. We're going to bring in jQuery in a little while. We're only going to make one call using it, but there's some things, other things I want to say about it. You can use jQuery. It works really well, Unfortunately, in my apps, I've kind of straddled. I've used some jQuery and some DOM, which is lame. I know I should just make a decision and go with it. But if I had my preference, I'd bring in jQuery early and use it, just because it's just so much more. Mainly for DOM access, selectors, and manipulation, but not so much for all the animations. We have our own animation library in WinJS. So we have some event listeners, and we're just going to call this add item, edit item, and delete item, which we need to define. So let's put the handlers in up here. And I'm just going to drag them up here. So now we have, and you can see now that we're starting to use a view model. So the add item, edit item, I didn't ask, but can everyone see, is the font size okay in the back? You good? Okay. And before we start the view model, the other thing I wanted to mention was this. How many people are familiar with the iffy at the top, the first line, the iffy? It stands for basically, it's an immediate function. Now, you'll also heard them called anonymous function. Well, of course, it's an anonymous function because there's no name. There'd be a name here if it wasn't anonymous. So it is anonymous. People will call it self-executing. It's kind of dumb because it doesn't self-execute because it doesn't call itself. The runtime calls it. So it's immediately executing. So it's an immediate execute function expression. I forgot what the other I is for, but look it up. That's the best name for it. Most people call it an iffy. But the idea behind that, this is also very common in just normal web work and normal front-end web development. That creates a scope. It creates a context because by default, all your variables you define are global. That's not a good thing. So this keeps all of our variables, all these vars here, inside, that's not my phone, that keeps them all inside this scope so they don't leak out into the global space. All right, so now we have some method calls. Now let's create a new file, a new JavaScript file called, it's got to be a JavaScript file. We'll call it viewmodel.js, and I'll just drag in. This file is going to get big, but we're just going to start easy. It's a namespace with an iffy. So we're just, so think about the namespace as our interface. It's the easiest way to think about it. It's just our interface, and these add item is pointing to that add item. You'll also notice the way I'm defining these functions, they will be hoisted, so order doesn't matter. It's not something I normally do in front-end web dev when there's going to be other third-party libraries and other things. It's not something I normally do. If you read Crockford's JavaScript, The Good Parts, he discourages using these types of function declarations because they are hoisted, which can create some ambiguity. But in Win8 development, they seem to just read easier. So I don't discourage them in this kind of work. But they'll be defined before the namespace gets defined because they get hoisted when the file's first parsed. So first I'll repeat the question. His question was if he had another file that declared a namespace of the same name, would it just glue them together? I don't recall checking it, but if I had to guess, I would say yes. And I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty sure that they would, right? Because you can refer to that namespace in multiple places. So I believe, I'm almost certain it would just glue them together. Good question. Okay, so let's see, what's the next step? So we need to bring the file in. We haven't brought the file in yet, so let's do that over here. So we are going to put it, I like to put it up above. We'll stick it here. So this is going to bring in our view model file because that's important. We also have, the other thing that we're going to do, now we're going to add a little bit of functionality. If we were to just fire it up right now, you'll notice that you can't select anything. Our app bar is there, which is cool, but I'm right-clicking, and it's not selecting them because the selection mode is set to none. So if I right-click, it's just bringing up the app bar, and there's no functionality here yet, but let's fix that. So we're going to scroll. I want this to stop coming up. So let's scroll over here. This is our list of groups. You'll notice that we're using another control with options. This one is provided by the runtime in the UI.js file. So let's change this to single. And that will give us our selection mode so we can actually select things. And then real quick, we have a couple of other things to do. We want to make sure that when we select it, we're gonna add a little behavior. So when we select something and then choose something from our app bar, it actually deselects it and makes our app bar go away. So we're going to add some functionality for that. But first we need to put an event listener on the selection changed event. So we'll drop that here. So now on selection changed, on anything that we select, we'll fire off this selection changed method, which we're going to drop down here, right there. Okay. And all that's going to do is going to grab the app bar. .WinControl basically returns the control of that element because obviously just query selector is going to give you the DOM node. .WinControl turns it into an actual object that has more awareness about the class that is defined for that element. And then show. So whenever we choose something, it's going to pop up. Let's just have a look. Whenever we choose an item, by right-clicking on it, it's going to select it with the checkbox and then bring up our app bar. And when we, now what we need to do is make it so when we choose one, it makes this go away. But we can only select one because we chose single. Doing it again. All right. So now let's add the reset. And that is going to go here. And then, of course, let's call it. All right, so now when we run this, we should get the behavior we're looking for. And this is just to get us started. So we select, we hit add, app bar goes away, and our selection changed. Now, one of the things that we should look at this piece of code here, this reset. The first couple of lines are pretty easy to see. I mean, they're just going and grabbing our list view control and our app bar. But then we're calling clear on the selection, and that passes back a promise. Now, when we start, JavaScript, another thing that's really great about JavaScript is it's asynchronous, which means that it's constantly doing a lot of things, and its eventing model allows it to do really well in asynchronous operations. Typically, a typical pattern when you're doing asynchronous is to provide a callback. You make a method call, you pass it a callback. At some point in that method's execution, it calls your callback. So now that's the asynchronous part of it. So you're not blocking on that call. You'll just get called when it gets freed up. It's a really common pattern. Well, it's so common, but the problem with it is there's no expectations around it. It's just a callback. That callback could have any number of signatures. So what all a promise is a promise is like a callback, but instead of a callback, it's a returned object, and it supports a complete with no errors, an error function that will get called if there's any errors, and a progress function. So when you create a promise, you pass it three things. I'm only passing one, which is not a best practice, but this guy here, this dot done, is processing the promise. So that function that I have highlighted now is the success. And they're in order that you would typically use them. Success, failure, progress. So we're just omitting the error and the progress and just using the success, and that's when it'll hide the app bar. All right. Yeah, man.
Is that chaining, like jQuery chaining, or is that just
kind of a It's not really. You're calling done on the promise. So the promise is being returned from clear. And then you're calling done on the promise. And in the done, is when you pass it any of the three functions. So it's not really chaining, per se. Not really, no. Not with this. All right, cool. So that's got us pretty far. At least we have some understanding now about the structure and about a number of different things. Let's make sure I didn't forget anything. Okay, so we did all these things. So the takeaways, activation starts in the app manifest, goes to default, and then goes to navigation just by default. For single page apps, I didn't mention this yet, but one of the things that isn't immediately intuitive is if we look at our default.html file, you're seeing we have you'll see this UI dark. Now that's because obviously the background's dark and it adjusts everything else in the style sheet around having a dark background. If, say for example, you had one page was dark and you wanted other pages to be light, you could, and you'll notice as we look through these different HTML pages that they all have style sheets defined. It's almost like they're meant to be isolated on themselves. But what happens, maybe it's easier if I just show you. We'll get to look at one of the tools. One of the popular tools for doing this type of development is the DOM Explorer. I typically have it pinned right here just because it's so awesome. This is like your F12 tools in the browser. We can choose select element here, and then we can go and select something, and it'll highlight that node for us. You'll notice up here in the head that we have these defined, and then it starts to add on more, like this grouped item.css. As you navigate around, as those pages have more CSS, they just keep getting tacked on. But if you hit the back button in the navigator, it doesn't remove those references. So now think about what that means if you have the whole dark light thing. Now the way that UI dark and UI light style sheets work is they operate on the same selectors, and they just make them look differently. Well, if you have one defined in one file, one defined in the other, whichever one went last is the one that's going to win because it doesn't remove those references. Now this is only true when we're dealing with single page apps, and what that means is we're using the navigator. It automatically has that content host, and it takes each of these additional pages and just jams them in to that content host as we navigate around the app. But this is an important point when you're dealing with style sheets, because if you have different style sheets that are using the same selectors with different things, it doesn't work really well. So it's just something to bear in mind when you're deciding to use a single page app, because you might not get the styling that you're expecting. Let's go back over here, finish this up. So namespaces are awesome. They're my default, my kind of de facto way of doing the modularity. Controls are just classes with options. You can feel free to create your own, and the navigator is a good example. We didn't data bind the app bar commands, but we certainly could have, just didn't. And then promises or just callbacks with better expectations. So just to kind of give you a sense. And as far as our little demo is going, we basically just added an app bar, a couple of commands with a little bit of behavior, but no real data binding stuff yet. All right, so let's actually add some behaviors to it. So we're gonna finish up add item, edit item, and delete item in our view model. We're gonna look at the one-way binding. You can think of data binding as three different types. There's immediate or direct data binding, which is I guess one time would be the best way to describe it. It's one-time data binding. An operation happens, the data is bound to the template. The other one is one-way data binding, which means that the binding will always happen from your data to the UI, but never from the UI back to your data. And that can be a live one-way too, and that's what we're about to see, a live one-way. So as our data changes, it updates the UI. And it, so it's a live one-way. And then, of course, the other one is a two-way. Typically, it's live, which now if we make changes in the UI, the changes will be seen in the model. Now, the road that I was talking about earlier that we're going to go down that we're not going to be successful in is trying to achieve two-way live data binding. Can you do it? Yes. It requires a third-party library. The WinJS stuff doesn't do it automatically. It doesn't listen for the events from the UI and filter those down into the model. But that's not necessarily that important, as we'll illustrate next. But you can use something like Knockout, which is what we'll bring in later, which I'm really not thinking we're going to have time, unfortunately. But even if we do, if you went only with that, then you would be successful, because Knockout works in 1.8 apps, but just not the way we're going to do it, where we're trying to bind two different binding mechanisms using one data and one UI, which is a bit aspirational, but yeah, it doesn't work. All right, so let's have a look at how we can, let's have a look at that live, let's not do that yet. Let's have a look at this live one-way data binding. All right, so this next step, so we'll start by adding to our view model. So we have the stuff. I'm going to start adding some functionality in here. So we have our add item body. Let's have a quick look at this. So the first thing that's happening is we're getting the key of the selected item, and that's calling a function we haven't dropped in yet. We'll drop that in a second. Then we're using this data.items. Now, data, I should bring this up since I don't think I have yet. Our data file, this is the data file provided by the template, defines a namespace, and that namespace is data, right? So that's where that data call is coming from. It's going right into our model, if you will. So data.items, get item from key.data, that's going to give us back the actual item that we're bound to in the model. And then we're going to create a new item. And, you know, we're calling it add item, but really we're just cloning it with some changes just because it's easier. And there's only a handful of properties on it. But you can see that we'll provide values for title and subtitle, but we're just going to use whatever the title we selected. So you have to select an item and then choose add. It'll kind of clone it with these new title and subtitle. That's the way it's going to work. Then it's going to push that item on. So the first thing we'll have to do is we're going to have to drop this get selected key in. We'll just drop that here, have a quick look at that. It's also using promises again. We grab our list view. We call get items. When you call get items, the get selected items on your list view, it does it asynchronously. Could be a really big list, and so it does it asynchronously. So then we call done, and then we grab our key once it's finished. Now we need to be able to get to our model. So if I go back over to data, we're going to create a new interface member, if you will, for our model, and that is actually our list, and that list is our binding list. So we needed to do that, and now we can finish out this edit. So let's just grab edit. Nothing special about edit, same thing. Get selected key, get the index of the key, get the item from using the key, and actually we don't need ID here, but we'll use it later. That's why we're using it down here. So now for edit, all we're doing is we're just changing the title, but we're keeping the same object itself. So we're grabbing the object, changing the title, and throwing it back in. And you'll notice that we're using this set at, and that's an important point. So we're literally taking the object, making a change to it, and then taking the whole object and applying it back to the model. And that's obviously different than only changing the title like this line does. And so we'll look at that distinction in a second. And then, of course, delete item, also there, no drama. So how many we want to delete? Oh, so if you're going to delete, you notice that to add items to the model, you're going to use push. It just pushes it onto the array. And splice is the delete. There is no delete or remove. There's a splice, and then you have to define what ID and how many you want to delete. If you wanted those replaced with something else, then you can put that here, like what items you want replaced with the ones you deleted. This is the third parameter. Okay, so let's have a look at where we are now. Fire this up. Now, we'll add one. So we're going to use this one as the clone. So we right-click, we choose add, and boom, shows up right away. Live one way, right? We pushed it into the model, and it showed up right away. If we want to delete one, we'll delete this number 4. And immediately, boom, it's gone. So that works right away, live one way. Works great. And now if we wanted to change one, we'll take this number 3 and we'll edit it. And sure enough, you saw the text change. So this title has been changed. Same thing right away, right? Now, the important thing to understand about that, the change, is the change only happened because the list view is listening to certain events on the binding list. So, and one of the ones it's listening for is item changed. And that item changed is being kicked off here. So what's not happening is if we commented this out, let me see, I want to make sure I'm not getting off track. One second. Quit. Yeah, I was in the right spot. So let's comment this out. And now obviously if we fire it up again, we won't see the same edit behavior. So if we right click here and choose edit, nothing, right? But it worked because if I click over here, title that's been changed, right? So it did change it in the model, but nothing was listening for that changed in order to be able to filter it back up through or to kick off the event that allows it to repaint the list view. So that's an important point. Here's something else that's interesting, right? Is you can make that object that we're binding to an observable. An observable means that it's listening for changes, right? You can do that pretty easily that's what I thought. I'm just checking myself, making sure I'm not doing something stupid. Here where we're defining, I'm back in our data file. So this is the data file where we define our binding list. If we pass in this null is supposed to be an array of items you want to bind it to. We don't have anything just yet because those are going to get all added right here. But this it also supports options. And there's really only two options you can supply, binding and proxy. And binding is normally false. When you add binding to true, every time it adds an item to the binding list, it basically makes it a dynamic observable. And dynamic observable is another type that's provided for you. That means that any changes that you make to it will also get filtered, will throw an event. Unfortunately, the list view isn't listening for those events either. So we could try this now, and it shouldn't work. We should get the same behavior which we did a second ago. No, those are the kind of mistakes you like to see, right? Where was I? Yeah, so because it is bindable, it's now firing the item changed event, which is allowing it to change, right? So that was the fix. So the fix was add binding equals true, or you can also call binding.as. The as function does the same thing. It basically takes this dynamic observable mix in and applies it to the object, so it'll then publish the events on changes, and it does that for each of the fields. So that was the fix for that. Cool. I think that was it. for that one. Let's pop back over. We only have 10 more minutes, so we're not going to be able to see all of it, which is okay because, like I said, it wasn't going to work anyway. And I've certainly covered most of all the important stuff that I wanted to cover anyway. But let's see what our takeaways were from that. So the binding, the list view is subscribing to on item inserted, on item changed, on item removed, and on item mutated. And on item mutated, I believe, is when you're dealing with a list that isn't so much a complex object like the objects we're dealing with now, but just a string, I believe that would change the on item mutated instead of on item changed, just a different event. But it's not subscribing to the changes on the items by default unless they are the dynamic binding, which they are now that we added that. So I mentioned push, splice, and set at are the different methods that throw those events. All right, so now let's have a look at some templates, and we'll just do as much as we can for the next few minutes. Switch back over. We're going to augment the template. We'll look at the template that's being used now. We'll make some changes to it, and we'll add some styles, event handlers, which we're going to do event handlers the way WinJS probably doesn't want you to. So we'll look at that, and then we already converted the items to the observable. So let's pop over here, and we're going to change the item overlay. So if you look here, we have two templates. We have a header template and our item template. And obviously, the header template is what's painting the headers across the different sections. The item template's what's putting each of the boxes on the form. We're going to make some changes to this. You can see here, this is using data wind bind, and it's binding the background image to the source attribute on this image. Same thing with the alt. The alt attribute is being bound to the title property in the object on this image. Over here, we're binding to item to text content. And what you'll notice by looking at these are the DOM properties. These aren't the HTML properties. There is a bit of a trick. Let me just do this real quick, because it took me a second to figure this out, and so I thought it'd be good to show. So if I go here, there's a couple of shortcuts you can use here when you're in the JavaScript console. For example, I can type in $ and then the name of an ID, like @bar. And that gives you the HTML response, right? You can also do something like $$ if you want to do like a CSS type of selector. I think there's an item. And same thing, it gives you a node list. But that doesn't, I mean, that's kind of cool, but it doesn't give you those DOM properties that you need in order to know what you're binding to. If you right-click on these, you can say evaluate as object, and it gives you the object representation. That wasn't really intuitive when I first was doing this, so I thought it'd be a good thing to know. But that's how you can find what DOM properties are available by having a look here. So let's change this out. Let's change out our item template with a different one. And so we're going to change out. Come on, don't do that. We'll change out this whole item one here. And you can see that we're making a few changes. This is all the same. The background image is good. We're adding a visible to title visible. Oh, this is the wrong one. This is the wrong code sample. So, Oh, I grabbed it from the wrong one. Thank you. That's why it's the wrong one, because we changed it again later. But if I go here and change item overlay. Yeah, that's what I did wrong. That looks correct. And then take item overlay, drop it in there. These are some new ones, right? So now you can see that we're still binding title to text content. Now we're binding style.display to item title display. And this is obviously wonky, right? I mean, because if you know the value of item title display, it's going to have to be block, inline block, none, because it's a style.display property, which isn't, that's really not what you want to be bound to. If you're going to do data binding and you're going to do things like visible, or you want to show and hide things, you don't want it to be block and none. You'd rather them be Booleans. So the takeaway is that you can do data binding to a number of different things, like style, like we're doing here. On click, this is another thing. This isn't the typical way you would do binding to events in WinJS. The typical way would just to be able to put an on click here, and then just give it the name of a handler. Rather than, because this on click is now going to fire on the object we're bound to, which means that the object we're bound to now has to have that function. So to do that, let's do that. So we have an on click, we have a style. Let's add something to our view model that will make those changes for us. So I have an augment item here. Let's have a look at this function. This function does a couple of things. It's basically adding some properties and some functions, some event handlers to this object. And we'll call this from initialize, which we don't have yet. Let's drag in initialize. So now inside initialize, we haven't invoked this anywhere yet, but when we initialize our view model, now it's going to go through each of the data items and then call this augment item, passing in the item that it's doing the for each in. It's going to add things like item title display, and then add these event handlers, save item and select text box. Now I had to do this mark supported for processing because of security restrictions in WinRT. It's not typical that you do event handling the way I'm doing it here. The reason I did it this way, people are probably sitting there thinking, all right, Don, you've said that this probably isn't the way that it's meant to be done in WinJS. Why are you doing it that way? Well, because if you've looked at other front-end frameworks like Knockout and other ones, that is typically the way you would do it. The object you're binding to has the event handler on it. That's a way you can do it. The reason we're doing that here was really just to try it and to poke around. And when we did that, we got errors that required us to mark supported for processing. So now this is the object. If we were to finish this out, we're going to have an init up here so that we can initialize this from outside the view model. And we'll also have to add this into item. So if you think about this, when we add a new item, we want it to already be augmented with these extra event handlers and types. And then edit item new fields. Yeah, so there's also going to be some new fields in each of these as well. So when we edit an item, we want to actually set those, right? So it's when we select an item and choose edit, that's when we want to flip these, because what we're really doing is we added a text item and a button to our item template. I didn't really call that out, but that's what this edit controls here is. I added an input box and a button to it. So the idea is we're trying to create some kind of pseudo inline editing feature so that when you select an item and go to edit, you see a text box and a button that allows you to update its title, right? That's the idea. Am I pretty much done on time? Is it? Yeah, I thought so. Okay, cool. So I think it's okay that we didn't actually get to finish with the demo, but the idea is that what I was trying to do with this was really to try to explore data binding in a way that is really tied more to front-end web dev than it is to WinJS, so that you can see where does it have advantages, where does it have shortcomings. It has good data binding. We saw that. We could add it. We could add items, edit them, delete them. As long as we were sure to do it a certain way, it had a reasonable amount of functionality. Does it have the two-way so that we can make changes in the UI and they're reflected back into the model? No, it doesn't have that, but I would suspect that that's being worked on right now, either in the community or or in the ivory tower, and it'll imagine it'll be available at some point, right? In the meantime, my recommendation would be to use something like Knockout, which does a really fine job of two-way data binding, and there's other good libraries out there that do it as well. Let's see if there's anything to wrap up. The binding options aren't that flexible, especially when you compare them to something like Knockout, but they do work. The recommendation would be to use onClick if you want to fire an event handler for an item rather than trying to put the event handler in the object itself. But if you do, use Mark supported for processing. We didn't get to it, but we were required to, in order to show the text box and the button, we had to call force layout in order to get the UI to refresh. And I'm sure there's probably a better way of doing that than with an item renderer rather than the way we were doing it. But hopefully you learned a little bit about WinJS development, a little bit about data binding, what some of the shortcomings are, where it does really well. If you have any questions, let me know. Enjoy the rest of the conference.